Good morning on this Wednesday, and welcome to the coffee table. I'm Quentin Chandler, and in the studio with us today is Sean Dusek, superintendent for Kenai Peninsula Borough Schools. Sean, thank you for joining us today. Wondering if you can just go ahead and introduce yourself and say hello to the audience.
Well, thank you, Quentin. My name again is Sean Dusek, superintendent of schools, and I've actually been with the school district now close to 25 years. Started as a teacher here in the Soldotna area, moved into a principalship at Soldotna High School, and have been at the district office the last 10 years. In the last 5 years, I've been the assistant superintendent of instruction. So that's me in a nutshell professionally.
Thank you, Sean. And you are fairly new to the office of superintendent. You took over for Dr. Steve Atwater not too long ago. Could you go over that transition for us?
Yeah, sure. You know, Dr. Atwater accepted a position in the UA system in December of last year, and that's where I started as the interim. And then through the hiring process, the board selected me on a three-year contract moving forward. So technically, this is my first year as the superintendent of schools. And so far, the transition has been pretty smooth. Like I said, you know, I was Dr. Atwater's assistant for instructional services for the last 5 years. So worked very closely with him throughout the 5 years in terms of what we did instructionally. So I think the transition has been really smooth.
Got you. Are you? I don't know if you're planning on continuing any of Atwater's policies or Atwater's kind of way of doing things over there for KPPSD?
Well, you know, we've been very focused on, you know, integrating technology into the classroom. We're moving into the realm of blended learning. We can talk more about that later, exactly what we're trying to do there, where we're utilizing online part of the time and having students come to school part of the time in the classroom. But, you know, we're trying to continue to move the district forward. It was always Dr. Atwater's goal to leave the district in a better place than where he found it. And I believe he did that simply because of some innovative practices, especially with technology. And I hope to continue those.
Great. Well, next I'd like to talk about this last school year. And Sean, can you just tell me, are you happy with the direction the district has been moving this past year?
Well, I think so. We've really taken some strides with our graduation rate. You know, we continue to be in the 80% range. I think we're closer to 82% now, which is really good. We lead the way with the Big Five school districts for sure. And we've been very focused on career and technical education opportunities for our students. We have many more students now that are gaining certificates in career readiness, and we talk about some of those industry certificates, you know, hazmat training, HazWhopper. Those type of certificates can get kids onto the platforms right away or into a construction job right away. We've been very focused on national construction curriculum, where you can also get some certificates that will allow you to get and work with contractors right out of high school. So that's a real big part of where I think we're being successful. We also have a lot more students that are taking advantage of the Jumpstart program, where we have now juniors in college classes, and they're qualifying to be in college classes through the AccuPlacer assessments that the college requires. So they're legitimately college students by the time they're juniors. And we have more and more students reaching that bar, and that's really some definitions of success that I'm proud of.
Got you. And that's interesting to me. You're talking about the certificates that you're kind of guiding students towards, and you know, also college prep, which is the school's job in a nutshell. It's interesting to me that you're kind of diversifying. You're focusing on diversifying and not just funneling kids towards college like a lot of schools have done in the past.
Yeah, we're very focused on the individual needs of students all the way through their K-12 experience. We really believe in personalization. We're getting better at it. We work hard on that. There's an instructional practice called differentiation. It's difficult to do. Some people take it to mean that every single student has their own academic instructional plan, and that's difficult to do. And so we work with groups of students. We tailor to their strengths. We look for their interests. And, you know, we also help them shore up their weaknesses. I mean, we don't just let them, if all they want to do is present verbally, we also have them do writing, you know, so that they're well-rounded students. But by tailoring to their strengths, we capture their engagement, and then they do better in school. And that's really something that we try to work on. And that leads to this diversification, because some students, they want to get into the world of work, or they want to go to the military, or they just, once they're out of school, they want to get on with their life immediately. And some people choose to go the college route, which I think that we do very well preparing our students for as well.
Got you. Well, are there any specific goals that you have in sight for this coming school year, 2015 through 16? Anything that, any kind of benchmarks you want to reach, anything specifically that you're going to be working towards, as far as just long-term goals?
Well, long-term, we want to get to as close to 100% graduation rate as possible, and that is, as soon as a student walks in the door as a ninth grader, within 4 years, they're going to graduate with a diploma, and that's a K-12 effort. There's a lot of work to do, you know, in the primary and intermediate and middle school ages to get kids prepared to make that successful transition. And also, a part of that is, again, meeting students' needs. Some students do operate in an online environment very, very well. So providing those online opportunities while also having them in school, that's a part of the blended learning concept. And blended learning really makes learning a 24/7 proposition. And so we want to take the concepts that are learned in the classroom, apply them out into the real world. I know that Homer High School right now does a really nice job with that, with some of the community service hours that they require for graduation. And there's lots of kids up at Homer High that go well beyond the required number of hours. I mean, they're doing hundreds of hours of community service. And really, that's a big plus for our teachers, because they can take those basic concepts that are in the classroom, apply them out in the community, and helps focus their interests. So either it's a career readiness that they're getting set for college readiness.
And as far as just that, for the short term, for this current school year, anything that you're, you know, just you're shooting towards?
Yeah, this year we're really focused on attendance, and a part of that is engaging students at school. Finding their interests again. You know, I keep coming back to that personalization. That's really what we're about, meeting individual student needs. And, you know, we need to engage families as well. And so attendance is a big priority for us this year. But then, of course, you know, we do have something else that's right on the radar here, and that's working with our state legislature and state government, so to help them find a long-range plan for sustainable funding for not only the state but for education.
Right, and that is probably going to be the big topic of discussion today, as I'm sure it is for you pretty much every day. You know, the budget is looking terrible in some ways on the state level, and it's affecting you in a number of different ways. So I'm wondering if you can kind of just lay out for us where you are as far as the state budget cuts impact numbers-wise.
Well, you know, last year, the state had taken away what they call the one-time funding that was cut from education, which wasn't a huge cut, but it was significant enough where we did have to increase our pupil-teacher ratios at the secondary level, that's middle schools and high schools, by a half a student. And that did have an impact on staffing and some class sizes. We also reduced our curriculum materials purchases. We reduced some activity travel. We reduced some staffing at the district level as well, did some reorganization there. So, you know, we had an impact last year. Based upon what legislators and the governor are saying currently, particularly with where oil prices are right now, they're looking at significant cuts. And between education and health and human services, that's the two biggest pieces of the state budget. And so, unfortunately, it looks like that we'll be taking another cut somewhere. We're not sure yet. But I do agree with what the governor says, in that, you know, we can't cut our way out of this situation that we're at, because if we continue to do that, we'll move from a fiscal crisis to an economic recession crisis in the state. And so there has to be a good conversation on diversifying, and also what other revenues are out there. And we look forward to being a part of that conversation. I know that our school board has had some very good conversations on how to lead the educational side of things and be a part of the Sustainable Futures conversation.
And I am sure you're also kind of, you know, taking that message to the legislature, trying to lobby and express your concerns to them, and also what solutions you think might work best with you guys.
Yeah, certainly. You know, we aren't necessarily picking any kind of, you know, one particular solution. I mean, we want to be a part of the conversation. We certainly want to lessen the impact to the individual classrooms as much as possible. You know, there's the other piece of the puzzle. If we don't get this solved, or if we make these, you know, late cuts, kind of like what happened last year, you know, that impacts our ability to retain teachers. You know, the board made a really good decision last year in that we put out the contracts to our non-tenured people fairly early. And I think you see that now, the fruits of that this fall, where we had very few openings. You know, we didn't really run into a shortage, I guess. If you take a look across the country and in other districts around the state, they still have lots of openings. And that then translates into real large class sizes, really large class loads or case loads for special ed teachers. We didn't do that. But we can't continue to do that necessarily, because we are, you know, using our fund balance, you know, our savings account, and that we were able to do what we did last year because we had a healthy savings account, but that's starting to dwindle. And that's why we really need the state to work on a long-range plan, and specifically have a long-range forward funding plan for education.
And this year you didn't cut any faculty this year, I believe, right?
Well, we did have some faculty that we had to release simply because of enrollment. And then also, you know, we did absorb some positions. There were some retirees, and we didn't replace them, those type of things. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we are starting to downsize a little bit, and part of that is a function of enrollment, and part of that is a function of, you know, the budget situation that we find ourselves in.
Gotcha. And it's only going to continue in that direction if the current climate doesn't change.
That's correct.
So you also, you mentioned that, you know, your savings are starting to dwindle. If we don't have any solutions that have a real impact anytime soon, I believe you're going to be looking at deficit spending in at least in the next year, maybe the year after that.
Well, we actually have been deficit spending the last two or three years. We've been using our fund balance about $1 million to $2 million at a time. We're scheduled to use about $3.5 million this year of our fund balance. Part of that is because of health care. Part of that is, you know, we try to provide the best possible services that we can. You know, we try to roll those forward year to year because, you know, these students, they only have one shot at this. And so we try to provide those services in the best way we can.
How do the state cuts affect you as far as funding from the borough?
Well, the state funds us about 70% of our budget. And then the borough then, based on what they're allowed and then their maximum allowable, is about 30%. So whenever the state cuts, then the impact to the borough is they can't give us as much. So it lowers their maximum allowable. And so it really is a double cut. We were fortunate that the borough assembly and the borough administration supported us with funding to the maximum allowable. But again, any cuts to the state has a direct impact of what the borough can provide us. And the borough has recognized that, you know, education is a high priority for them.
Right, Right. So what services would be most likely you'd be looking at taking to the chopping block if you just absolutely have to? What would I say be prioritized as needing to be trimmed back?
Well, we're beginning that process already. We've been taking a look at things at the district level. We're trying to transition our curriculum from, you know, hard copy textbooks to being online and also, you know, being electronic. But that takes a little bit of time to make that transition. But curriculum, we do spend a significant amount on. We may have to reduce some of that. We may have to reduce some travel for activities and for personnel. But the thing is that about 80-85% of our budget is personnel. I mean, we're a people business, you know, teachers and administrators and support staff. And so in order for us, if we have significant cuts, we will have to make adjustments with our staff. And how that will work out and how big of an adjustment we're going to have to make is dependent upon what happens at the state level. And so we are taking a look at pretty much everything at this point in time, and we're hopeful to get information from the legislature and the governor as soon as possible so that we can work through the process.
Right, and of course, you know, most of your, as you said, most of your budget is people, and when you start cutting people, the quality of education starts to suffer.
And I'd say any cuts that we take, the quality would start to suffer, because some of the things, like I said, the curriculum materials, you know, we need microscopes. We need the chemistry pieces to the puzzle, the physics pieces, you know, those type of things, the art supplies, the music supplies. We need those things to help support the teacher in the classroom. I've been through this before in the 90s when I was here, and you know, it's not pleasant, because when I was a teacher, my average class size was 32 as a math teacher, and I remember having kids sitting on the back wall, on the counter in my room, and it's difficult. And you know, so we've been through this before. It's just that, you know, right now the state's maybe in a little bit different position, because they do have different avenues to help come up with a long-range plan. And, you know, fortunately, we some of the district leadership in the past, they knew things are cyclical in this state, and, you know, let's get prepared. And so I, you know, kudos to Donna Peterson, Melody Douglas, you know, and Steve Atwater for getting us in a position where we could hopefully weather this storm as best we can with minimal impact.
So right now, overall, you'd say the situation is bad, but you're not in panic mode yet.
No, I mean, you know, we're not going to ever panic. You know, we're going to do the best that we can with what we have. The best thing that we have going for us in this district is our staff and our parents and our students. You know, there's a reason why we're recognized as a leader in the state, and I attribute that to those three factors. So we'll get through this. There might be some difficult patches. There's very likely going to be some very difficult decisions that'll have to be made. But I'm confident just in the quality of people that we have involved in the educational system on the peninsula that we'll make it through.
I'm wondering how you're doing as far as communicating the current situation that you're facing with the budget to families, to parents, the rest of the community, and also, you know, if people are going to have an opportunity to come to you guys to, you know, offer their suggestions as far as ways to move forward with the current budget situation.
Yeah, we've been making a concerted communication effort already. We're going to be working with some small groups around the peninsula in September, just to start to discuss just some of the political pieces that are out there, as well as the funding. But most importantly, on October 15th, we're going to be doing a presentation to all of the site councils at all of our schools in the district. And that'll be to discuss exactly where we're at fiscally, some of the options that may be out there, and to gather input. So we have a couple of different opportunities. Obviously, every one of our board meetings are centered around fiscal discussions, and we welcome input at all of our board meetings. And in February, we will also have a large meeting that will incorporate representatives from all over the peninsula, and that's really in the thick of when we're going to decide what we're going to do with the budget, because the way the process will work, we do our October presentation, and then we'll have a series of, after that, we'll go then to the board to go through the input, and by December, we'll be giving some options to the board on what they can consider. There will be some public budget hearings specifically where we will go to various schools. The October meeting will be, I'm going to be giving an electronic online presentation out to everybody all at once. We can't be everywhere all at once. But then we'll have some what we would call town hall type meetings and public presentations at various schools. January will be a preliminary budget, and that's when a lot of the conversation will happen, and that's also timed with the start of the legislative session. And as I said, in February, we'll have a large meeting up in the Central Peninsula where we'll be bringing in people to further the discussion, refine what's going to happen in the budget, and then also work with our legislators.
Gotcha. So lots of opportunities to have discussion. And also, those dates are going to be staggered out so that as events occur, as things change, you'll be able to also communicate those changes.
Definitely, we pride ourselves in our communication.
Right. So, people would like to add their comments on the situation right now today. They can call into the coffee table at 907-235-7721 if you're calling locally. And you can also call toll-free 1-800-979-5224. In the studio today with Sean Dusek, superintendent of KPBSD. Sean, while we're waiting on that, wondering if you can talk to me a little bit about healthcare costs. That is something that is, you know, extremely important for just about everybody, every organization right now. Health care costs seem to be rising for everyone. How is that affecting you in the school district right now?
Well, that has had a significant impact. You know, we have close to 1,200 employees in our school district, and a year ago the total costs that we paid out were a self-funded plan. So employees and the school district contribute to the plan. The district contributes at a rate of 85% and the employees at a rate of 15% to the plan. And so, a year ago it was $23 million in total that was spent. That was what was paid out of the plan to cover costs. And now we're at $25 million. So we've increased by $2 million. It's the highest year that we've had. We've tried to work with the state. We've been working with the borough. How can we get these healthcare costs under control? You know, the state of Alaska, all around the state, it's some of the highest costs in the country for healthcare. And we're trying to work on getting a handle on that. I think we've over the last 5 years we've had a 40% increase, and mm-hmm. So it's a tough situation. We've worked on some potential wellness type plans as best we can. That's been kind of hit or miss, but we need to continue to work with our employees to try to mitigate the cost, and also with the state and the assembly and the borough.
Gotcha. And there's no everyone seems to. No, there's no really one. It's not really one single cause for the skyrocketing of healthcare costs, and so there's not really one big solution that anybody's going to be able to come up with.
Yeah, we're looking and we're trying to be a part of the conversation that the borough mayor's putting together that task force to take a look at healthcare costs, and we're hopeful that will gather some solutions to this issue.
And another thing that is kind of adding to, at least number-wise, adding to your the size of your budget is retirement, teacher retirement. The state legislature just added a significant amount of money to the district's budget, to districts around the state's budgets to accommodate that. Wondering if you can speak to that. I think there are going to be some people who are, you know, a little bit confused or surprised by the increase, and they're going to be wondering what's going on.
Yeah, that money from the state, that's not available to us for spending in the classroom. That's what the state did is they actually, I believe it was like $3 billion that they used to put toward the two retirement systems, the public employee and the teacher retirement system. And none of that $3 billion can be used in the classroom. That $3 billion was for past issues with the retirement systems. It's called the unfunded liability that the state has. And so they tried to lower that so that it doesn't cost districts and municipalities as much on a year-to-year basis to fund that, because we are charged a certain rate that we have to contribute into those retirement systems for all the employees. So when Governor Parnell made that $3 billion decision and the legislature supported it, that looks like our budget increased huge. But we don't touch it. All that really is a pass-through, and it's an accounting mechanism that the state uses to distribute it out to cover the costs for particular municipalities and districts, and then it immediately goes right into the retirement fund.
Right. So basically, it's like you got this influx of cash, but you also have these expenses that are already there that cancel them out right away.
Right. And, you know, and it has no impact on the cost per teacher right now. This is to make up for things that happened 10, 20, 30 years ago. And so it's also, you know, for all public employees. You know, we're talking troopers, we're talking, you know, the state workers, those type of things. And so that money has no bearing really on, you know, what's happening here in our district.
Right, right. And, you know, just the nature of retirement, that means that this is just going to be an ongoing thing for, you know, perpetuity, basically.
Well, and it's interesting because there's a lot of states in the country that have, you know, they haven't funded their retirement systems completely, you know, so, and sometimes states get into that because they didn't fund it, you know, immediately at an appropriate rate. I think Alaska ran into a problem with the, you know, actuary that they used several years ago, that they, you know, there was a big issue at that point in time. And so that kind of got us behind in paying and being prepared to pay out for retirees. And of course, I think a big issue that happened with the retirement systems is the cost of health care. You know, when that started to really spiral up, that had a significant impact to the overall system.
Right. Thank you for answering that. Next, I want to talk to you a little bit about the blended learning, which you so nicely brought up earlier in the conversation. That is, you know, really interesting to me, especially considering, you know, that we are living in Alaska and we have so many communities that are spread out, and a little bit, it could be difficult in some cases for students to, you know, make it to school. You have options. You have options for those kids as far as the online opportunities.
Yeah, I think if anybody's taken any kind of courses through UAA or KPC, they use a system called Blackboard online, and it's very. You know, I mean, sometimes it's interesting because, you know, you don't have a lot of interaction with the professor and those type of things. And, you know, we're dealing with high school kids. We're dealing with middle school kids. We're even looking at moving into the elementary realm and we don't use Blackboard. We use a system called Canvas, which is very similar to Blackboard. But what teachers can do is they can post lessons, they can actually record their lessons, those type of things, and post it to Canvas, where students, if they're gone, they can access Canvas, they can see the lesson that was going on, they can access any of the materials that were used, and they can do it while they're gone. Or a teacher sometimes, not all the time, but sometimes will podcast, basically their lesson, and post it, and have students, outside of class, look at it, see what they understand, and then the next day or a couple of days later, work with students during that class instead of, giving the information. It's already there, and now students are practicing using it, and so then the teacher is working with them in a little bit different role and manner. They call that a flipped classroom. So that occasionally will happen. The other thing is that if you also tie a service learning component to it, students can keep up with what's happening in the classroom, and then instead of going to class maybe that particular day, they go and they work with the soup kitchen, or they work with the city, or whomever they're doing their service learning project with, and apply the knowledge that they've been learning online or in the classroom out in the world, and then they can also post back on the Canvas what they've been doing. Then there's that electronic communication. But again, with us working with the age group that we are, we still have kids coming into the classroom to interact with everybody else and the teacher for further information, and then to make sure that they're collaborating, because that's also a big component of blended learning.
That's also interesting to me, the service learning aspect of this. It seems like community service is a big, it's an important priority for you guys, one that you don't see in a lot of districts. So wondering if you can tell me, what is the, benefit to you to, kind of guide your students toward getting involved in service learning opportunities?
Well, something that I've noticed about kids nowadays, I never thought I'd say that, but I guess I'm old now, so, kids nowadays, the thing that I've seen with them is they want to be involved with their community. They want to make a difference. So we're going to try to facilitate that in a learning environment that is safe and also meaningful for them. So, community service is very important to them. And so we're going to facilitate that. And, like I said, Homer High School has done a really nice job with their community service component that they have involved. We have at Kenai Central, they do a job shadow day. That's the other benefit of community service and service learning, is they can explore career options that they may be interested in, and working with mentors out in the field. And they may discover they're not that interested, or they may discover that, wow, this is what I want to do. And it really helps guide them in the direction that they want to go.
Got you. We'll come back to this, but first we have a caller on line one that I want to help out. Carl, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. Thanks for the program.
Thank you, Carl. Did you have a question or a comment for Mr. Dusick?
Well, I just wanted to encourage vocational training, especially in the maritime fields, and I was hoping that here in the Kenai Peninsula we could be working towards a school ship vessel that would service Cook Inlet and connect our regions and our schools. And I know I made mention with Dr. Atwater when he was superintendent, and he seemed to be really encouragement of that. And, vocational boat building programs here, even small electric sail-assisted vessels, a small project, not an expensive one. But I was curious to see if there's any movement in that. I know Homer is moving in that direction with our community college and work programs and whatnot. As well as I want to congratulate Soldotna football and soccer players up there that did really well in comp seasons and high school sports. But how are we doing our detention and our kids at risk, kids that are in the gray that are thinking about dropping out or getting in trouble? What kind of measures are we taking for rehabilitation in those regards too? So I'll get off the air and listen to the comments. Thank you.
Thanks, Carl. That was a couple of points. So I'm going to try and stagger that for you, Sean. First, he was concerned about vocation and vocational learning, and also he was talking about a shipbuilding project that kids can get involved with. Wondering about your thoughts on that.
Well, that would be very, very exciting. We We do have, I believe, a strong career and technical education program. We do we use some grant money that provide after-school academies for students. And in some areas, we do have, like, small engine repair type opportunities where we bring in community members to work with a teacher and with the students that are interested in that. And I think that this would be a prime type project that would fit with that. And when we talk about, you know, the local community college has already invested in that, we do partner very well with KPC and Kachemak Bay campus. And it would be exciting to partner with the experts and our kids to give them a taste of, you know, this type of a project. That would be very, very exciting. I'd be very interested in moving that forward. And it's just a matter of trying to get, you know, the community college campus working with the high school, the local high school, and then we can put together the project. And hopefully it would, I think the best possible way to do it would be an after-school construction type academy, but tailor it toward the marine end of it. You know, we're very interested in internships. I know that right now over in Seldovia, Susan B. English is working with HEA and some of the maritime industry over there to provide internships for students so that they can get that hands-on experience in those various areas, because we were just talking about electrical. I think he had mentioned some of that as well. And, you know, we have to work through some of the issues. You know, liability always pops up, but I think that those are roadblocks that we can overcome to provide our students really good experiences.
Right, and those fields are, I would imagine, would also be very interesting to a lot of kids in this area, considering the region we're in. Even if they don't want to live in Alaska forever, there's still quite a few maritime industries just around this part of the country.
Mm-hmm.
And so. One thing I'm wondering, do you see this as being cost prohibitive, or do you think, as Carl said, this could be done, you know, cheaply but still effectively?
Well, it will take a little bit of funds. There's no doubt about that. But I think between the partnerships and then also the availability of local experts that, you know, will be able to be a part of the projects, that really is the key to this, is to bring in, you know, the boat builders and the electricians, and sometimes they may have to volunteer their time. Sometimes, you know, we might have some funds to help support them to be able to come in, but it's a matter of making those connections, going through the process to help our local industry experts interact with students, you know, because it is a little bit different. There's a lot of wonderful people that when you put them in front of a class of 15 and 16 year olds, it's a terrifying experience. But we can help people with that, and we would have the teachers, and, you know, really, if you're yourself and it's an interesting topic, because that's who we would match kids up with in their interests, you're going to engage them. They're going to want to be working on that project, and they're going to learn, and then they'll get a taste of, is this really what I want to do? And so that would be very exciting to put together.
Right. Sounds great. The other topic Carl was mentioning, which isn't nearly as exciting, was disciplinary measures and, you know, reining kids back in while at the same time, you know, bringing down the hammer when you need to. Wonder if you can speak to that.
Well, you know, we do need to hold kids accountable for their actions. I mean, the choices they make sometimes aren't the best choices, so there is going to be accountability in there. You know, we don't want kids to be out of school. We want them to be in school. Sometimes kids behave the way they do because they aren't engaged. And so it's our job to try to figure out how to engage them. And it's projects like this and giving them opportunities to work with experts and in areas that they're interested in, you know, that help making connections between what is happening in the classroom to their interests that are outside. That's a part of the puzzle, you know, and again, sometimes poor choices are made, so we need to respond accordingly. But we certainly bend over backwards to give kids as much support as we can and to help that we can. We've just received a new grant. It's called Project Aware, where we do have a mental health counselor available. She's located at Home Reflex right now, and we do have one up at Kenai Alternative, but she works with kids in the entire region that may need additional support in a number of different areas. And we work very hard, I think, though, with kids that do get into some minor issues. It's about engagement, and it's all about helping them make better choices, but also understanding why they're making the choices that they made so that we can then, get those interests met.
And I'm glad you mentioned those two in-house counselors that you guys have now. Wondering what kind of prompted you to start this program, and do you see it expanding any at all, since it's only in two schools now? Do you see it expanding in the future?
Well, what kind of prompted us was that we have a high rate of students in transition. Homeless students. We also have a number of students that have been seeking, alternative type settings in alternative type schools. And, there have been some issues, drugs and alcohol, that have been out there across the district, across the state. I mean, this isn't a new phenomenon. I mean, it's out there. And so when the state came out with a grant to help schools provide even more services, that maybe there's a little bit of a gap, our local providers, maybe that connection wasn't made completely, or they're just overwhelmed as well. This was an opportunity to provide those, what we call wraparound services, for our students. And we were fortunate enough to get this grant. One of the parts of the grant is that we are going to train another 150 people in the skills necessary to meet the students' needs. And so that's a work in progress right now. So do I see it being expanded? I certainly do. And, it's about recognizing students that need support, and then helping them find the resources, and then working with the professionals that can really make a difference for them.
And I want to talk a little bit about the money side of this. You said this was in large part due to grant funding. So it's not... looking, as we were talking about the budget earlier, this is not, a drain on the school district's resources.
No, it's not a drain right now, and that's good for right now. The one thing is I don't want anybody to think, well, just because the grants are going to run out, then automatically it's going to go away. If we see success, we see more students staying in school, we see more students being successful in school and being supported, we will find a way to continue the program, because, that's really what it's about. We're putting in this project to, we believe it'll work because it's based on research. It's based on it worked in other places. So we're going to try to replicate that program and tailor it to our needs. And if it really is successful, we'll find the way to continue it.
Right. And, of course, there's, another big topic, student homelessness. You already mentioned that you have your Students in Transition program to kind of help address that. Could you tell me where you are right now? Have you seen in the last year, another increase in the number of students, homeless students, or are the numbers kind of staying the same? What do you know right now?
Well, I reported to the board last night that as of yesterday, we had 100 students enrolled in this program, which is about 30% higher than last year. Now, last year we did end up with over 200 students in total throughout the year that were enrolled in the program. And so we appear right now to be running a little bit ahead of where we were last year. And of those 100, 66 are in the, or 67, excuse me, are in the Central Peninsula area, and then 33 are here in the Southern Peninsula. And out of that 100 in total, 22 of them are unaccompanied. And that means they're just completely on their own. No adults involved in any of it. So we have 22 students in this district that the only support that right now they're getting is through this program. We're very concerned about the rate. We're concerned about, I am in particular, that we're well ahead of last year's pace. That puts stress on the system as a whole. because without the Project Aware type and the students in transition type programs, we weren't equipped to really handle the situation. Fortunately, we have these programs in place. One's federally funded, the other one's grant funded. And so we're doing the best that we can, knowing that these kids, you know, it's a challenge for them. And I applaud them for coming to school every day because they have other things that are probably more important to them, like where are they going to sleep tonight and where are they going to get something to eat. So I'm glad that they're coming, and we have some programs in place that support them, and I know that our staff that work with these kids, they do an exceptional job when working with them.
All right, and I'm wondering if you can tell me, what options do you kind of have on your end to help address the problem and mitigate it?
Well, what our current programs do right now is that we get the students and the families with various partner entities out there that can help them maybe get placed in a shelter, those type of things. We also help them find, you know, food and clothing and some of those needs. We get lots of donations where we can get school supplies. They obviously qualify for lunch programs and breakfast programs at school, so that's very, very helpful. We make sure that some of the health care, we get them sent to the appropriate entities there to help them with health care needs. And ultimately, you know, once we recognize what the situation is that, you know, the counselors and or staff at the schools do work closely and check in every day with these kids just to make sure things are moving along and, you know, they're in the best possible place they can be to learn.
I don't want to sound callous here. Everybody, of course, would love to, you know, see these kids taken care of and helped out, but there is that viewpoint that, you know, where these kids end up after school is out is not your responsibility. It's not the school district's responsibility. So wondering if you can speak to that, that reasoning, why you take that that interest in helping these kids out.
Well, you know, like I said before, you know, we're very focused on personalization of students. And so we work as hard as we can to meet every single student's needs. And now this is just another group of students that have a couple of different issues, maybe as compared to maybe like my daughter, who's, you know, and she's at college now. You know, she had breakfast every morning. She had a place to sleep every night. But she had some other issues that she had to deal with in terms of some of the academic stressors, some of the, you know, social stressors that she may have had that were just as significant in her mind as some of these others. But we're very focused on that personalization. And, you know, we have when kids walk in our door, the number one priority is to take care of them, keep them safe, and help them learn to the best of their ability. And in order to do that with kids that don't have a place to sleep, we have to help them find the agencies and work with the partners out there to get them that place so that they don't have to worry about that, so that they can learn.
Is there anything that the community can do to, you know, help the school district out in meeting the needs of these kids?
We do a really good job with our program. Kelly King is our lead coordinator with that, and she works with lots of partners. But if anybody is interested in helping, certainly we can contact Kelly. What we typically look for is, you know, it's the school supplies, it's those type of things that really we're in need of to help these families and to help these kids. So they can get through the day and the week. And we've had several success stories where kids have, after their families or they have been able to land on their feet, they've been able to move forward. We have many graduates that we see. We have a candlelight vigil in the Central Penn in November, and kids that have graduated from our schools that maybe had been a part of this program earlier, they do attend and they tell their story and they also talk about where they're at. I mean, I recall somebody from last year talking about they had just gotten their associate's degree from KPC. So, you know, we're making an impact. It's a positive impact, and we're helping kids become productive for their adult life.
Once again, I want to open up our phone lines. 907-235-7721 is the number to call if you are listening locally, or if you are going to be calling toll-free, 1-800-979-5224. We have about 10 minutes left in the show, so don't waste any time. Next, Sean. I almost called you Steve.
Well, he's a lot taller than I am.
Next, I'm wondering if you can discuss some of your legislative priorities with me. Obviously, the budget is up there as far as, you know, communicating with state legislatures what you guys need. But is there anything else that you guys are trying to communicate with the legislature right now?
Well, as you mentioned, you know, funding is the big one, and the board had a great discussion yesterday about that. And really, it's about supporting the state to find a long-range plan. We're looking at educational funding that's forward funding. You know, if we wait, we get into the trap where we have to hold contracts and we could lose teachers, and then that's going to just hurt us in the fall. We need to know in advance, and that's a huge priority. We're advocating an educational endowment, setting aside money, and we've had this conversation in this state before, setting aside money that can, when you put it into an account, then it'd be like the permanent fund. Interest could then fund education. You know, we have a priority on health care, trying to find a way to mitigate those costs. And then another big one for us is early learning. We've got about a third of our students are in a pre-K program right now. And we've also seen some great success in, like, the Head Start programs that are also around the district that are federally funded outside of the schools. And we'd like to see that universal. We've seen tremendous success with those early, those pre-K students. By third grade, they're doing very, very well. We have the evidence. We believe that the state should support that. And then, you know, we are concerned about, you know, our facilities around the district. They're older. We've done a wonderful job maintaining them. We've done what we were supposed to do. We're very concerned that the state put a moratorium on the bonding ability of you know, local municipalities and, you know, the borough. Our facilities need to be upgraded. They need to be brought into the 21st century. Like Chapman, there's not a lot been done to that school since the 50s. So we need the state to reconsider that, to move forward with that, with bonds. I think our constituents in this district are prepared to upgrade these facilities so that kids are in a setting that is conducive to what they're going to encounter in the 21st century. So, you know, we'll be working on that as well. You know, those are really the main priorities that we have. But obviously, funding is probably 95%.
Got you. And can you kind of talk to me a little bit about, you know, how that communication is made? How is that communication made? How do you kind of make sure that this stays in front of the legislators and that they don't really forget about these issues?
Well, what we do is at the board level, they'll make a decision here at the October meeting based upon legislative priorities. We've already started that discussion, you know, then we'll work in concert with the borough, put together some information for the legislators that we will get sent out. Now, I do meet with legislators frequently. So do all of the board members. We do put together packets when we work with them. There are what they call legislative fly-ins, where board members and I will go down to Juneau and go and sit in the offices. We're fortunate, you know, between Representative Seaton, Chenault, Olson and Senator Machicki and Stevens and Representative Stutes. I mean, we have a very supportive group for public education. They really are. I mean, if you think back, you know, Mike Chenault was the man who made sure that the area cost differential was fair back several years ago, and it's been supported by the recent study from ICER that came out that said, yeah, you know, you should stick with the area cost differential in the manner that it is. And, you know, so we've got demonstrated support by our local legislators. they take this information, they take the rationale that we have, and they also work with other legislators to try to get support to help out our district. So that's kind of how we work with the system.
Right, right. Well, Sean, we are running down to the wire here. I have a couple more things for you. First, what direction would you like to see the district continue moving into in the next few years?
Well, we're really focused on, they call them 21st century skills, but these are skills that I think we've all been expected to have throughout our schooling, which is, critical thinking skills, communication skills, collaboration skills, and being creative. I would like this district to move into demonstrating those skills, having kids practice those skills more than being focused on a bubble test. I understand that testing is a part of what we do, but focusing more on the skills that kids are going to need every day in the world of work and, post-secondary and college is the most important factor. And I think that our teachers do that, and they're getting better at it. Especially now that we're moving out of the world of No Child Left Behind with all of the emphasis on testing, we're actually now able to widen that curriculum a little bit and help kids apply their knowledge in the real world. And that really is the most important piece that I have moving forward.
Got you. And I was going to follow up with what changes you'd like to make. Is that basically the big change, the biggest improvement you'd like to see?
Well, the other change is then leveraging technology to really support that. And I think that we're moving in that direction with blended learning, and service learning as well. And I think that it's going to a big piece of this is engaging the community with the community experts to help our kids see what's really out there. And is this an area of interest for kids?
All right. Well, my last thing for you, Sean, I want to turn it over to you. If there is just anything that I have missed completely that you would like to address, or anything that is sticking out in your mind as just important to communicate to the community.
Well, I think what's really important is, I just want to say thank you to the community as a whole. I think overall our communities are very supportive of the schools that are in this district, particularly their neighborhood school. Everybody pretty much likes their neighborhood school, and that's great. If it weren't for the community, if it weren't for the students, if it weren't for the staff, we wouldn't be a recognized leader in the state. And I'm really proud of this district. I'm proud of the leadership. I mean, our school board members work very hard to do the right thing. They're going to have to make some difficult decisions. There's going to be a lot of opportunity for input in the coming weeks. But again, the stars are aligning that difficult decisions are going to have to be made. And, we're going to do the best that we can and have the least impact to the classroom that we possibly can. But I'm confident in our staff, and I'm confident in our parents and in our students that we're going to be fine. And we're going to continue to move forward and get everybody as best prepared as possible for what they want to do and get us prepared for their future, the students' future. It's not about our past. It's about the students' future.
Well, thank you very much, Sean, for coming in. And, thank you for answering all these questions.
Yeah, there was just a couple of them. I wasn't sure how many I'd have, but,
Well, you are listening to The Coffee Table here on KBBI. Thanks for joining us this Wednesday. Bullseye with Jesse Thorne is coming up next. You were listening to an interview with Sean Dusick, Superintendent of Kenai Peninsula Borough School District.